This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial, and you can send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Tomorrow night in Tiger Stadium, you can hear he's clearing his voice. He's getting ready to be the voice of the Valley for the 34th year. Dan Bornay, Deacon Dan Bornay, former president of the Louisiana Chemical Association for how many years?
28 and a half years.
28 and a half. So you have exceeded that amount of time as the voice of the Valley. He has now surpassed Sid Crocker, who was a legendary voice at Tiger Stadium, as the longest tenured voice of the Valley. And Dan still has some gas in the tank and miles to go as the Tigers chase a fourth national championship starting tomorrow night at home in Death Valley before 100,000 of their closest friends.
102,231.
That'll be the official number. There might be a few no-shows, though.
Maybe one or two.
But anyway, Dan Bornay will be calling the action as he has for home games at Death Valley since 1986, when a young freshman quarterback named Tom Hudson led the Tigers to victory. Texas A&M, was that the first game?
Texas A&M, that's right. Yes,
1986.
Indeed. Right. Right.
I recall that was a championship season for the Tigers and the SEC, but at home that year they lost to Miami of Ohio.
Yes, they did. And I had a friend of mine, I was working at Kaiser Aluminum at the time, who was a big Miami of Ohio alum, and boy, I could not handle it. He was on me for a year.
21-12, I think, was the score. Yeah. And LSU that year did win the Southeastern Conference, and after losing to Miami of Ohio, went to Florida and beat the Gators at Gainesville. And it was quite a year because the athletic director, Bob Broadhead, lost his job in the middle of the season. And then Bill Arnsparger vacated to Florida at the close of the year to become the athletic director at the University of Florida. And it was Dan's first year, and what an indoctrination.
Yeah, it was great doing those games with Arnsparger's coach. So he was a great coach. You know, he had installed the defense at the Miami Dolphins, a great Super Bowl defense, and he was a great field general. He could change a game plan literally at halftime and rearrange the entire offense and defense.
But 0-3 in bowl games, all of which were routes. So he had his moments too.
You bet.
But he was a guy who had led the Dolphins' defense to great success. They're the only team to ever go undefeated in the National Football League, 17-0 in 1972. And he came here. He had only had one foray as a head coach, and that was a 7-28 debacle with the New York Giants, 74-76, the losingest coach on a percentage basis in the history of the National Football League to this day, William Arnsparger. And Miami of Ohio was his alma mater, I believe.
He was, at the time of his hiring, the oldest coach, college head coach, and at the time of his going to Florida and Mike Archer succeeding him, Mike was the youngest college head coach at that time. So it was interesting.
Yeah, Archer got the job at 33, and when Arnsparger was hired here, he looked ancient. I was much younger then, but I think he was younger then than I am now. That was 1983. And Bill Arnsparger, I think, was born in 1926. And in December of 20, he was all of 56 years old.
Yeah.
He was 56. And
imagine that.
Think of that. Here, Nick Saban, he'll be 68 on Halloween, and he's just getting started. I think the guy's going to coach till he's 90.
Dale Brown and Nick Saban have birthdays on Halloween.
There's something to be said about
that. Something to be said about it. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but it's somebody will figure it out.
Well, they're both into process. Dale Brown is the most organized person. Many people may find this hard to believe because his mind is not like that. It moves and bursts, and he talks that way. But as far as the way he lives his life, the files he keeps, the meticulous nature at his yard, at his house, everything is in place in his life.
And he really writes well. You know, I'm on an email distribution list that Dale sends around. A lot of what he sends is really good stuff by others like John Wooden and, great writers. But Dale writes well himself. And it's always fun to get an email from him.
He does indeed. And he has an opinion.
Yes, he does.
About a lot of things.
Yes, he does.
Well, the coach now is a fellow named Ed Orgeron, who is now 58 years old. He got his chance late in life. Think about that. He's 58. He's the same age Arnsparger was when Arnsparger left LSU. Mm-hmm. And Coach O is a guy who presumably could be here another decade or more. And the early reading on him is he's done a very good job, but he's 0-3 against Alabama. Is Alabama the big enchilada? Everything else is just a prelude to what happens on November 9th in Tuscaloosa?
No, I don't think any game is a prelude. You know, every game is an important game. But clearly, people would like to notch a regular season win against
Lost
Alabama.
Eight in a row against those guys.
Yeah.
Eight in a row, Dan.
Yeah. Going back to 2011, I think, last time we won.
Yeah, won the game of the century in overtime, 9-6, right. And then lost in the Superdome in the championship game, and it's been futile since then. But Alabama's been beating a lot of people in that time.
But there are 11 other games, and maybe 12, yeah. So concentrate on the next game.
And Saban lost 8 assistant coaches in the offseason. He runs people off. He's hard to work for, obviously, but a lot of those coaches go on to bigger things after being in his fold, and yet he's still considered to have a team that will compete for the national championship.
He handled that question, by the way, SEC Media Days. They asked him about losing assistant coaches and some of them under, you know, trying circumstances, and he basically said, you can either do it and have fun doing it or you can do it the right way. And still have fun, but you have to do it the right way. I thought he answered the question really, really well.
And I saw that Scott Woodward took a shot at him at the Rotary Club.
I was at Rotary. Were you there?
I was not there, but
I think it was very much tongue-in-cheek.
I'm sure it was tongue-in-cheek, but Saban keeps score, as we know, and he's a smart man, but his IQ was ridiculed by one Scott Woodward. Now, imagine that. Is he trying to stir it up, fan the flames?
Ask Scott. Ask Scotty. He can speak for himself.
And I saw that John Kennedy, apparently they're trying to cut down on high school drinking in Alabama, which would make sense. Mm-hmm. But John Kennedy, our junior U.S. senator, said, I didn't know they raised the drinking age to 32 in Alabama.
Kennedy's always good for a quip. You know, John is he's really a character, and you know him. He's got this folksy way about him, but he's about as folksy as... As Fred the Fox.
He went to Oxford.
Oxford, you know, not in Mississippi. Okay, he went to Oxford in England. He's a Vanderbilt graduate, mm-hmm. Brilliant guy. He was mm-hmm. Assistant General Counsel to Buddy Romer, and he just did a wonderful
and
job.
He was a liberal in those days.
Well, he was more to the center than a lot of people.
Well, they put out that scorecard that drove your clients crazy for into the environment.
Well, Kennedy didn't have so much to do. John didn't have all that much to do with that. That was more or less.
Well,
a DEQ
he was a Romerista,
effort,
and he ran Romer's campaign in 1995. He was the guy. Yep. Now his brother George is a political consultant.
George,
after they lost,
very much so.
George said of his own brother John, he said, "You don't hire a product liability attorney to build a house."
Well, he's done well since.
He has done very well. Although he has suffered defeat, and he's come back from it, Dan.
And that's a mark of a true champion, you know, is to be is to get beaten and come back and win. And he has.
He has. He's learned from his defeats. And Coach O, Kennedy lost 3 races. He lost for attorney general once, and he lost for Senate twice. And then now he's a U.S. senator, may very well be a future president. He probably will run in 2024 for the highest office in the land. And John Neely Kennedy could become the second coming of Senator John Kennedy going to the White House. We'll have Camelot on the Bayou.
Actually, we had Camelot on the Bayou at Nichols State in 1967.
You were there?
I was there, happened to play King Arthur. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I lost the gal in the end. I lost the queen. And I also played Thomas of Becket, where I got assassinated in my own cathedral. So I went 0-2 at Nichols. I gave it up after that. I haven't been in any plays since.
Well, Dan came from Nichols to Baton Rouge and was hired at WAFB by a fellow named Carlton Cremines. Right. And one of your colleagues was Sid Crocker.
Sid Crocker was he did the weather. He was a booth announcer. He did commercials. He was a jack of all trades. He was also the puppet in the Buckskin Bill show.
Well, Dan came in here to talk about football. He even brought a roster with him, man.
Well, I brought a depth chart. You know, this is important because being the PA guy, you call the plays after they run them. Okay, you really don't have anything to do with the strategy mm-hmm. of running the plays. And so it's important to know who's playing where and how much depth there is on the offense and the defense. And we've got a lot of depth. We've got 9 and 6, maybe 16 starters back on offense and defense. That's a lot. And Coach O has improved each year that he's been coach for the full year. 6, 8, and 10 victories, I think that's how they ran.
Well, so, 6 and 8. In an eight-game season, essentially.
Yeah, but still. everybody's very optimistic. The interesting thing about our roster, we have 25 players, well, 25 numbers mm-hmm. that are worn by multiple players.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Changed a lot. Over the last years, that's become...
And I remember Vern Lundquist once making a mistake saying that... I think it was Ryan Perilou was playing offense and defense. No, he was not. Obviously, another player had
duplicate numbers.
Duplicate numbers. Yeah. We'll talk about that and more when we return. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. And Dan Bornay is in the house now. Deacon Dan Bornay. He is a man who, as you heard, spent over than 28 years as head of the Louisiana Chemical Association. Tomorrow night he starts his 34th year as the voice of Tiger Stadium. He'll soon be starting year number 32 as the voice of the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, and there will be a celebration of Pete breaking Oscar Robertson's record next year, February 1, and Pete Maravich is still the leading scorer in the history of college basketball by a good margin. And yet he is not in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame. Go figure that, even though the Hall of Fame is located in the Pete Maravich Assembly Center.
Jim, you know, the only time in history I've ever seen a game stopped by the media rushing on to the playing court or field, when Pete hit that shot that broke Oscar Robertson's record, the media literally, it was like the Normandy invasion. I mean, it was just a horde of
people.
The old
Cow
Palace. I was among them, actually, in the old Cow Palace, yeah. And so it literally stopped right there, and there were interviews with Pete on the floor of the Cow Palace before the game resumed.
Well, John Brady, the former coach, was there as a kid in Mississippi. He came to see the game, and he said he had this sophisticated camera that only had like 5 shots. And it took Pete, I think, 6 shots. It took him six. So by the time he took the shot to break the record, Brady was out of film.
To this day, I'm certain he did it on purpose. I mean, I had never seen Maravich miss 6 in a row. I mean, I think it was just that's part of the showmanship in him. By the way, you know how many assists he had in that game? He had 13 assists. In a game where he broke Oscar Robertson's record.
Yeah, he was the real deal, and he should be in the Athletic Hall of Fame, but he is not, even though there are 4 non-graduates at least in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame. That's the reason they give for not putting Pistol Pete in there. Obviously, LSU is a political place, but Dan Bornay is not here to talk about the politics of LSU. He's an employee of the university. Who signs your paycheck, Dan?
Oh, man, I just they send it to me, and the name is spelled right, and I take
Does
it to
King
the bank.
Does King Alexander sign it?
No, he doesn't sign it. No, it's all done electronically.
Okay, all right, well, and the check doesn't bounce, and Dan still gets checks for his performance in Everybody's All-American. He was in that film with Dennis Quaid that was about Billy Cannon, kind of. Frank DeFord, the author, said it really wasn't about Billy Cannon, but Quaid is wearing number 20, and he's an LSU jersey. I take that as it being about Billy Cannon.
Well, it would have been different had it been filmed in South Carolina or in Mississippi, which is the two venues they looked at before they came to Louisiana. It was a Choo Choo Justice story that mm-hmm. DeFord had written. And once they got to Louisiana, I'm sure they recognized the importance of connecting these things.
Fine director, Taylor Hackford.
And his associate, Alan Blomquist, has gone on to great things, too, and has had award-winning movies. I got a $6 check from Warner Brothers 2 months ago.
$6. You get those every now and then, though.
Every now and then. It's hardly regular, but that's about what it would take to buy that cup of coffee that my colleague to the right is sipping
right now.
Ted
Shermer, who's waiting on deck.
He's sipping a $6 cup of coffee.
But I tell you what, I bet you just don't throw those in a drawer. I bet you
I actually have
them.
A picture of one. I have a picture of one. Yeah. Every now and then people will say, hey, man, I saw you on TV, you know, because it's kind of a cult classic, this Everybody's All-American.
And you're like Dick Clark. You look almost the same. I don't know what Dan Bornay, it must be that clean living that Deacon Dan does.
Well, I still go to a makeup trailer every morning, which is what you do.
And you ride your bicycle almost
when you have
every
a speaking role, it's what you do. You go to this, you know, little trailer, and you've got a wardrobe there, and there's a person that comes in and sprays you with stuff, and pat you down
you
with
do
powder.
That every day. That's
did
the
that
secret.
For 4 days before, during the shooting. We shot 4 days at Boudreaux's restaurant. Mm-hmm. That's where that particular scene was shot.
I was in a film much less celebrated than yours, and the problem, we were filming at the Sacred Heart Gym that had no air conditioning on July 4th and 5th, and I couldn't change wardrobe because... because you had looked the same.
Right.
And the first day, my shirt was so wet that I could barely get it off, but I had to put on that same shirt because I didn't have time to wash it, wear it back the next day.
People could smell you before they saw you, which is interesting.
At least it was in a gymnasium.
Now, that was that a Maravich kind of movie? Who did that movie?
Dangerous Proposition.
Dangerous Proposition.
Rad Sanders production. Good film, by the way, but you were in a big budget. That was a big budget.
It was,
film.
Jessica Lange, Quaid, Tim Hutton.
Mm-hmm.
John Goodman. John Goodman was,
he was in there as well.
One of the
and this
stars.
Was shortly after you became the voice of the Valley. This opened doors for you, and that was the primary reason why we brought Dan here. But as you can hear, he can roll with the flow. But the
we shot a bunch of sequences in the stadium.
I know.
We
I
shot
know.
Them
I was
at
there.
Halftime of several games, and it was a unique way to do it because usually you had extras for these types of things and. What they did was they took only one little section of the stadium and they dressed that section in period clothing, 1950s clothing. And then because of the magic of the camera work, you couldn't tell what everybody else in the background was wearing. But we had, at that time, there was a 72,000-seat stadium, and it was rocking at halftime for these two teams of actors putting on,
and
you
Quaid
know.
Quaid was actually doing the running.
Quaid was doing the running, and Mike Papajohn became a great star because of that movie. He was one of the defensive players, and Taylor Hackford recognized what a great stunt guy he would be. And Mike Papajohn's had a career
he
out of
certainly
that, and that's
has.
Exactly where he
and
began.
That's where it began. Yeah.
From Alec Box Stadium to the silver screen.
Mm-hmm. Not bad.
Yep.
But Dan Bornay, in 34 years. You have sat in that booth. I'm sure you think about your predecessor, Sid Crocker.
Oh, I really do. I do a lot. Because when I first came on at Channel 9 in 1968, the very first game that I went to cover, Sid invited me up to the press box, and he said, come on and see my booth. You might be doing this one day. And we kidded about it. It was a joke. No one dreamed that he would will me the job, basically.
And
bequeath it to me.
And you got the job because, well, obviously you were qualified, but I think you were the only person who applied
for
it.
Well, that is the absolute truth because Bob Broadhead had come in and brought some terrific helpers, people with him, but they were all Florida and Miami guys. And I wrote a letter to LSU after Sid retired, and I heard nothing for months and months and months. And finally, in August of 86, I got a call from Jamie Kimbrough and said, come and visit with us. And I did, and they had a roster kind of like I have here.
Yeah.
And they said, what about these names? You know, Rodrig, Laperouse, Gobert, Ogeron. Yeah. You know those names. Great.
By the way, a listener, I'm glad you brought that up because I got an email from a listener saying, is it Ogeron or Ogeron?
Ogeron.
It's Ogeron.
Yeah, because
you don't pronounce the first R.
Right. We just say Ogeron down in Lafourche Parish. Ogeron.
Ogeron.
Yeah, Ogeron.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's not Irish.
No. And he talked about a guy, we mentioned Senator Kennedy, who had three defeats. Here's a guy who was recruited by LSU, signed with the Tigers, went to LSU and quit, took his marbles and went home. And then all these years later, he came back and became head coach. How about that story?
It is a great story. It's a great story of a guy who did all of the things you needed to do to get where he is now, and there he is.
And he's a homegrown guy.
Yep.
And he's got a great team.
Fans love him.
Sixth in the nation.
Fans love him. Absolutely love him. And from what I can tell, the team loves him too.
Well, and he's just got to beat Alabama.
It's one game out of 12, Jim.
He's got to beat Alabama.
You got about seven rolling up to it.
Ask Charlie McClendon what happens when you don't beat Alabama.
Yeah, it's interesting about McClendon with that great winning percentage. And, you know, he wasn't beating Alabama, but nobody else was.
No, I looked, Bear Bryant in an 11-year period lost five SEC games. Yeah. Five in 11 years. Yeah. So nobody was beating him with regularity, obviously. And Charlie McClendon lost every year from 71 to 79. He lost nine in a row, and he got canned. And LSU this year, they play at Tuscaloosa. If they lose, that'll be nine in a row. Yeah. It'll equal Mack's level of futility against the Tide. But I say that because Charlie Mack was a very good coach.
But Jerry Stovall turned that around.
He turned it around. He lost twice.
And then he won 20 to 10.
20 to 10 in 1982 in Birmingham, I believe.
Yeah, and Bear retired shortly after that.
He did. He died.
And died.
He wanted to address the LSU team. And Jerry Stovall said, no, it's my team. And I kind of like that. Can you imagine Nick Saban wanting to address the LSU team? Now, don't think it would happen. We'll be back with Dan Bornay, and then it's Ted Shermer on deck. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Wrapping it up with Dan Bornay, the voice of Tiger Stadium. Tomorrow night he starts his 34th season in the Valley. 1986 was the year. If you look back to 1986, Ronald Reagan was president of the United States of America, and Edwin Washington Edwards was governor of Louisiana. Dan, of course, has a long history in politics. He's known most of the movers and shakers in the last few generations, and is one of the great historians, both from politics and sports. And he is also Deacon Dan, a man who wears many hats and still has that distinctive voice that you will hear in Tiger Stadium. A few years ago, a listener notes, we've talked about this before, but you penned a poem about Tiger Stadium, and it was so good that it was ripped off. Not very successfully, but it was ripped off.
North Carolina State ripped it off, and they tried to apply it to their basketball program, and they had the sun setting in the eastern sky. And so, you know, we kind of said, well, let them have as much fun with it as they like, you know.
You know, North Carolina has this great higher education system. Yeah. Duke, North Carolina, yeah. North Carolina State. And yet, do you know their ACT scores and other measurements are lower than Louisiana, the state of North Carolina. So perhaps they're overrated. And the sun does not set in the eastern sky in Raleigh, North Carolina.
No, it does not.
Well, we mentioned Paul Bear Bryant. Yeah. And in the old days when we had phone directories, coaches used to have their names and addresses and telephone numbers in the book.
Charlie Mack's number was in the book.
Always. In fact, if you called that number on Menlo Drive, he would pick up the phones if he was home. Once I called Columbus, Ohio, and Woody Hayes picked up the phone. This is right after he beat up that linebacker, Charlie Bowman, too. But you got Paul Bear Bryant on the line.
I did. In fact, I was doing a research paper at LSU in graduate school when I was working for Governor Edwards, and one of our staff persons, Alice Howard, actually knew Coach Bryant. She told me she did, but I thought she was kidding. And about a half hour later, my phone rang, and she said, pick up on one. It's Coach Bryant. So I interviewed him. It was about a big scandal that had occurred. Look magazine had published an article about allegedly
Bryant fixing a game with Wally Butts.
Yeah. And
it
so
was Saturday Evening Post, actually.
It was a Post. And Coach Bryant told me how much the settlement was for. He asked me never to reveal it, but I'm under non-disclosure with Bear Bryant. But we did have a good interview, and I used most of the interview in my research paper.
Well, that's a great story. And
By the way, he was just absolutely engaging, kind, and responsive to all my questions.
Well, and
not all coaches are.
Wally Butts got a judgment on that, too. But but here you have the athletic director at a university who apparently didn't like the coach. So they're opening the season with Alabama, and he's on the phone with Bear Bryant, and that's when we had party lines. And this other guy just happens to hear the conversation. It's Wally Butts telling Bear Bryant everything that's going to happen. Now, Bear Bryant's in a bad spot there because I don't think there's a coach in America today who wouldn't take that phone call. But it was Wally Butts who was the one who was doing in his coach. And if I remember right, the score was 35 Alabama, 0 Georgia, and the coach was soon gone, and they hired Vince Dooley. So, you know, sometimes things work out. And it's worked out for 34 years for Dan Bornay. And Dan, Hope to have you back. As mentioned, in a few months, we'll be celebrating 50 years since Peter Pressmarevich became the all-time leading scorer in college basketball, and he still reigns as the number one scorer all time, 3,667 points, 44.2 points per game.
An individual record in a sport that I don't think will ever be eclipsed.
And stepping to the microphone now is Ted Shermer, student body president, LSU, 1976. Ted was born July 1, 1947. Pete's June 22, 1947. So you were born 9 days after Peter Pressmarevich, and you both left a big mark on LSU, and both had controversial tenures.
Stir them up, Ted, they called him.
Yeah, Ted was the first non-Greek president. He was by that time already a Vietnam veteran. And those were interesting times. It was a little before my time, not far before my time, but how was it in those days?
Well, a little known unknown fact is I taught Pete how to shoot.
Okay. Well, that.
But I did get a...
We're going to change mics.
No, I'll tell you what. Yeah, go ahead.
I didn't touch you.
Go ahead. Why don't you hold that mic, Ted, and put it close to your mic, too. Okay. There you go. There you go. And we'll be okay. So... You taught Pete how to shoot. Actually, you were in Vietnam while Pete was playing college basketball.
Well, my first semester in the fall of 70, I was here, and I still regret missing the last game when the Cow Palace, they played in the Cow Palace. By the time I got over there, you couldn't get in. You know, so, yeah, I didn't ever get the chance to see him play. I regret that. I did get to see some other great basketball players play here at LSU.
Well, when you graduated from Estruma, in 1966, same year that Pete enrolled at LSU. He enrolls at LSU and you go somewhere else. What happens?
Well, after I graduated, I was working for Barks Ripier, driving one of their trucks, and I decided, we were in the war, and I joined the military and then volunteered for Vietnam.
And went to Vietnam.
Yes, I did two tours. Yeah.
As a Navy?
And insurgency warfare. At that time, the SEALs didn't have their own group that took them to their assassination routes and that. And we were responsible, our unit was responsible for a section of Vietnam to operate with SEAL Team 1.
Well, you you saw some heavy action. People like you who have been there usually don't talk about it, but Ted... you obviously made a choice that most members of your generation did not.
No, well, yes. But when I came home in 1968, in October, I had to learn to live with what I did and what I was willing to do, and I started studying our country from that point on. And for anyone interested in ancient war nowadays, The Bright Shining Lie is a great book that really enlightened me on what was about the war, you know, what really was behind it.
And you served, what, 3 years?
3 years, 9 months, 22 days, and 15 hours.
You so you come to LSU as a man, as a freshman.
In more ways than one.
Yeah, as a man. And you graduated from a Louisiana high school. Mm-hmm. And in those days, thanks to Huey Pierce Long, whose birthday is today, by the way, you were able, through that high school diploma from a great Louisiana institution, Estruma High School, you were able to enroll. There were no ACT requirements. Yeah. So you go to LSU, and you've been in warfare. Were you ready?
No. I could barely read and write. I mean, I didn't really graduate from Estruma. I talked my way out to get an F change to a D, and that helped me graduate from Estruma. And I went in. I tell people, even after graduating, I couldn't say the alphabet on the way to graduation.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I my favorite subjects I could only take in my freshman and sophomore year because I could not write well and read well, so I couldn't take the more senior level, juniors and senior levels in history, political science, philosophy.
Well, how did you make it through LSU?
I took courses I followed the football team around most of the time, and whatever they took, I took.
You know, it's amazing from those years how many of those players, and those were Charlie McClendon players.
Oh, yes.
And that is really Mac's greatest legacy. When you look at those players, how many of them are doctors and lawyers and business people? He had a who's who of this community to this day who played for him. So the
I don't think they were in my classes.
They belied the myth of the dumb athlete. But there were some others, of course, I'm sure, who were scraping to get by. But you did it, and you became a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And today, a kid like you would not have that opportunity at LSU. Might some other school, at some other school, but not at LSU.
No, I think it's very difficult for the myth that you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps when you're born and raised in poverty like I was. That is a myth. Even in my time, it was rare. There is less than 4% or even probably less than that of poor kids that managed to get out of poverty. The inner city, I worked in the south side of Chicago before going to law school on AFDC, a case manager. And my childhood was tough. It is brutal for the mm-hmm. children who are born to a woman who's living in the ghettos in our inner cities. And then we want to know what's happening to these kids. If there's a heaven and a hell for countries, our country's heading for hell.
Well, on that cheery note, Ted is now a lawyer
Don't get me started.
California. He, for many years, lived on Mulholland Drive. So Ted's done rather well, was sworn into the bar.
That was my mother-in-law's property,
thank you very much. That's the old-fashioned way. Nothing wrong with having a rich mother-in-law. But Ted Shermer was sworn in to the California bar by...
Oh, yeah, Judge Ito.
Lance.
I figure in California, anyone could swear you in once you passed the bar, and it took two telephone calls and a letter to finally get him to agree, and he was not happy about it.
No, and we printed that photo of you being sworn in by him in Tiger Rag, and I don't think he was happy about that either. He wanted to do this kind of incognito.
Well, he was doing a cocaine case, a big cocaine case, and he took a break and came down off the bench and swore me in and then said, I hope to never see you in my courtroom. So,
how did you convince him to do it?
Oh, I told him I respected how he ran the trial of O.J. And I thought, well, if you watched the trial, what he didn't, he thought that the lawyers would abide by the rules, which of course they did not, especially those expensive ones that O.J. hired.
Yeah, like Johnny Cochran.
Oh, I mean.
Whose clothes were made by Manuel Martinez here in Baton Rouge, by the way. If it does not fit, you must acquit. and F. Lee Bailey.
Oh, yeah.
You go down to Bob Shapiro. He had a who's who of Barry Scheck.
Yeah. Barry Scheck's done great with what his DNA.
And Scheck's the only one who's really benefited from that experience. The others have not. Cochran's dead. F. Lee Bailey disbarred, and Shapiro basically disgraced. His high-priced clients didn't like him representing a man who killed his wife and another person in cold blood. But
so what's new about attorneys?
You have been an attorney, and I suppose have represented some people who have been on the darker side of life. But Ted has been on the fringe of society occasionally, and at LSU he stirred the pot, and we'll talk about his stormy tenure as SGA president when we return. 877-217-5757, back after this brief timeout on Talk Louisiana.
So you know, I'm Don Molino on the Voice of Louisiana Agriculture Radio Network. At the Chicago Board of Trade this hour, November soybeans 875 and a half up 7, March 901 up 6 3/4. October soy meal, $293.30, down a dollar. October oil up 22 at $28.59. New crop December cotton, $59.27, up 27. March, $59.89, up 24. September corn, $3.63, up 3 1/4. December, $3.72 3/4, up 1 1/2. September rice, $11.68 1/2, up 12 1/2. November, $11.99, up 13 1/2. September wheat at Chicago, $4.55 1/4, down 14 1/2. December, $4.64 1/4, down 8 1/2. November sugar unchanged, $25.80. January also unchanged, $26.12. August live cattle, $104.95, down 70. I'm Don Molino on the Voice of Louisiana Agriculture Radio Network. This is Don Molino with a tip about good time shopping for ag products. Kentwood Co-op in Kenwood not only offers a wide variety of farm products and a huge inventory of custom feed for livestock and pets, but most importantly, they treat each customer like they're a family member. General Manager Bubba Huckabee.
Our customers are the most important folks that we have. Everything we do is for them. All about trying to provide them with the best product at the lowest possible cost to make them as efficient in their operations as we can.
Kentwood Co-op, 501 Railroad Avenue, Kentwood. Your co-op serving your needs.
Owning an LS tractor is about a lot of things.
For me, it's about lift capacity.
It's about the hydraulics.
Owning an LS, it's about how well it's made.
Steel, baby.
More features.
Standard features.
It's about the land.
Making it better.
Having something to pass down.
It's about owning the best.
Find your local LS dealer at lstractorusa.com and see what it's about for you.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ted Shermer, the first non-Greek president of the LSU student body. The year was 1976, and he left quite a mark on the old war school. He is, along with David Duke, the most well-known person to ever be at Free Speech Alley. And when he was there, the coach was one Charles McClendon for the Fighting Tigers. And Les Douay, whose birthday is today. Happy birthday, Les, says Charlie Mack absolutely answered the phone at his house. And if he didn't miss Dorothy Fay, she would go get him for you. So there you go. Charlie Mack was a fine man, and he was the coach when you were student body president. And that was just after LSU had integrated its program. The first African-American to play football at LSU was 1972.
Yes, I know. When 1970, I followed the team everywhere they went. I went to Notre Dame, and I remember how I got my tickets. I had no tickets when I went up to Notre Dame, but I went to the alumni party in Chicago, and they were so shocked that this long-haired hippie was looking for tickets.
877-217-5757 for Ted Shermer, and we will go to the phone lines. And Ted he was the focus of a piece of all student body presidents at LSU, at least the most well-known ones, by Ed Cullen last year. Ed's a great writer, did a fine job. And one of those, the man who succeeded you, Jay Darden, has been on this program, and he says his whole political career was started by you because he couldn't stand you. Mm-hmm. And he said, I got to get in politics to counter guys like Shermer.
Yeah, but that sounded like Jay. But yeah, you got to realize the vast majority of SGA presidents were not only Greeks, but they were law students. And they would never do anything to rock the boat because they were looking at their future political career. That's why they did it. And Jay was definitely cut out of that cloth.
And Jay went on to be a Metro Councilman, a state senator, Secretary of State, Lieutenant Governor, Commissioner of Administration, and he's not done. He's 65 years old, and we have not heard the last of John J. Darden, who went to Baton Rouge High. You went to Estruma High School. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, Estruma had some big rivals. And were you a classmate of Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins?
No, he was a year before me, I understand. I just did my last three quarters of the high school. I was living in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I lived there for 6 years.
Well, Estruma produced Woody Jenkins, Ted Shermer, Smiley Anders, Billy Cannon, a lot of interesting people. Phil calling from Navarre, Florida. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Hoorah. Phil.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
I know exactly who this is. I recognize the voice. It's Phil Brady, as in the Phil Brady. The place named on Government Street in your honor, Phil Brady. And you must be calling to talk to Theodore Shermer.
Yeah, I was... I first met Ted when I was managing the Pizza Hut on Nicholson, and then later I opened Magoo's on Chime Street, and I went to LSU myself for 7 years, but after 7 years on the GI Bill, I was still a sophomore, so I figured I had enough, so I moved on.
Well,
but I had many enjoyable times walking over to see Free Speech Alley, to see Frank, I can't remember his name, the Christian, David Duke, and of course Ted.
Frank Boston.
And it was always an interesting time.
Well, thank you, Phil. And you and Duke exchanged pleasantries more than once. He shares your July 1st birthday.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
And talk about polar opposites. Did it ever come to fisticuffs or close to it between you and Duke?
No. I have with some district attorneys, but never with David Duke. And what was interesting about the alley, that's why I liked it so much, it was a free-for-all for sure, but it didn't become a physical free-for-all. I mean, I really enjoyed the form.
There was civility. And Duke... Yeah.
Not necessarily vocal.
Well, and Duke, he's not a fighter. He's a guy who likes to talk,
and
he's
was
done
so
it for a long time.
And what he said was so ridiculous. You know, to fight over something.
But then in 1991, he almost became governor of Louisiana. People forget how close he was because those first exit polls after he got in a runoff with Edwards, had him in front because the votes that went for Romer and Holloway, those were conservative voters, and he was certainly more conservative than Edwin Edwards. And that is one time the media beat down a candidate, just beat him down to the point where he was unelectable. And, of course, it also was a case of African-Americans electing Edwin Washington Edwards. Duke got over 55% of the white vote, but Edwin Edwards won the election 61-39%. And times were different then, but Mr. Duke's message has been co-opted by a lot of politicians who have come after him without the baggage he has. In fact, Steve Scalise had said, it told Stephanie Grace, I'm David Duke without the baggage. And he's now the number two person in the Republican minority in the United States House of Representatives. But you were almost thrown out as student body president. What happened to cause such anger among the flock when you were running the show?
Well, the anger was there for a long time because they always said I was anti-Greek. I'm anti-elitist, people who living on state property in those fancy houses and being allowed to discriminate at the taxpayer dollar. That's what
when
I was
anti. When
you
say discriminate,
no minorities were ever allowed in those fraternities and sororities. And
not as members.
No.
And
no.
Most still don't allow minorities.
But it was how? But they're on state property and they're
well,
under
that
housing.
Was 1976, Ted. We're 43 years later, and nothing's changed.
Oh no, I know. Only well, the body count has changed.
Well, yeah, some of them have been shut down.
Yeah.
And that's. That's something that is long overdue, considering the hazing that was involved. Mm-hmm. You weren't a member of a fraternity, obviously.
Let me think about no.
But another listener notes that you and Les Duhay played rugby. Is that right?
Yes, affirmative.
Those guys were kind of wild and crazy, weren't they?
Oh,
Hiller
yes,
Moore was
yes.
one of them, too, by the way.
Yeah, I was introduced to rugby in Vietnam by the Aussies. We had an Aussie dive team in our stationed with us.
Were you good at rugby?
No, I always wanted to be. I wasn't. I got involved in politics.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, Ted and I had a freedom of speech type case years ago against some of those elitists. I can't remember his name. He was Joe Delpit's business partner, but I remember that the settlement check hit him. Nasty annotation about lawyers, and so we had to pursue that angle too.
Yes,
yeah.
All right. It had rip-off attorney fees on the check.
That's
and
it.
I promptly sued him for slander, and so didn't. Mm-hmm. And he had to pay more.
Have a nice email here from Roger Sullivan, who's senior vice president of investments at Raymond James and Associates. He says that myth has it that Ted is the first non-Greek to be student body president. He says that distinction belongs to Dr. Randy Gurry, who was elected before you back in the 60s. And I know Randy, but I thought he was a fraternity guy. But he, according to Roger Sullivan, he was not.
Well, if he wasn't at the time, he sure to hell became one.
Really?
I mean, oh, he was the motivating factor of how homecoming just blew up. Him and Dean Reddick, who, and Reddick, as you know, was the assistant to Middleton, who was a real racist. And,
wait a minute. You're throwing out all kinds of stuff here. I don't
Well, I've been researching my book. I've been researching my book.
So you're
and
writing,
so all this stuff is
book.
Coming up.
Well, what was going on with homecoming?
Well, Terry Robiskie, that's why I'm here.
Terry Robiskie from Lucy, Louisiana.
And led the 16, SEC in all rushing.
1,117 yards in 1976, the year that you're student body president.
Yeah. Boy, they just roll off your tongue. Yeah,
yeah,
I'm impressed.
Okay. Yeah, but, so.
But anyway.
How does Terry Robiskie figure?
Well, I know you know the stats. Let me get to the background, which you won't know. But because he was doing so well for the first time, the football team put a black finalist, Cynthia Payton, on the homecoming 10 finalists. I'm the long-haired hippie SJA president. My job at homecoming is to escort the homecoming queen to the 50-yard line and kiss her. And it was going to be a long, long kiss. Because
you
I was
going to kiss the African-American homecoming
queen. I was
on
confident.
The lips.
Oh, of course. Tongue, maybe even. You know? And I was confident she was going to win. And obviously, so was the administration. And they made a rule saying that you had to vote for three or your ballot would be thrown out. And that would, of course, assure that a white homecoming queen would be done.
Grady on Highland. Hi, Grady. You're on the air with Ted Shermer.
Good morning. I'm enjoying the walk through time. I graduated from LSU in 1975, and I have an anecdote. I had a speech class, small class in the A and Dramatic Arts building, And David Duke was in my class, and there were two things I remember specifically about him. Number one, on Thursdays, I believe it was, he'd show up in brown shirt because he had just gotten back from Free Speech Alley giving his speeches. And another time, the professor asked us to all give campaign speeches for a presidential candidate. We were each candidates representing certain parties. And I recall I was the candidate for the John Birch Society, and David Duke was the candidate for the Black Panther Party.
The Black Panther Party? David Duke?
He openly admits you were a member of the Birch Society.
All right. Well, times were different then. Look at what's happening right now with the governor of Alabama. She was in blackface in 1967 at Auburn, and now she may have to give up her gig as governor of Alabama. Silas Bogue writes, given our disastrous wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, I'm curious as whether Ted thinks U.S. political leaders learned anything from Vietnam.
Well, no, all you have to do is look at Iraq. The worst case, what is even worse, the American population hasn't learned anything from Vietnam. But I would like to say the reason I'm in town is go Tigers. I had a good friend, Rufus Craig, who happens to be running for the Senate. The
Libertarian.
State Senate. Libertarian, and that he got me a ticket so I could come home for the first game. Very exciting time.
Well, Ted Schirmer, you're a good man, and we look forward to the book. And Ted, as mentioned, born in the summer of 47, 1 year after three U.S. presidents who were born in the summer of 46, Clinton, Bush, and Trump, and they did not make the sacrifice that you did. When Uncle Sam came calling for them to go to Vietnam, they took a powder. Ted Schirmer served with distinction. A great American, Ted Schirmer, right here in our studio. Thank you. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Until Monday, we'll be here with a live show. Stay tuned.